Dave Fanning on 2FM.
Now it is 19 minutes past the hour of 10 o'clock on this Sunday morning. Robert Plant, how are you?
I'm very good. How are you doing, Dave?
I'm doing very well indeed. Robert, you're coming to play here this coming Wednesday. Robert Plant and the Sensational Space Shifters. You're playing as part of the gigs in Cork. And you're not playing any other gig around the country, but you are playing Glastonbury next weekend. Is that it?
Yeah, Glastonbury next weekend, and then we're back into Europe again and onto the festival circuit, which is great, you know. I mean, I love it around Cork. If the airport's open, we'll be able to get there. I mean, it gets pretty nippy down there, and I've been into Cork a couple of times. I've been the last plane in sometimes, you know, but I've been in Northern Europe and the weather's been pretty foul. It was snowing in Estonia a couple of days ago, but we dropped down into Paris now and we're playing here tonight, and it seems like it's summertime.
Well, I'll tell you, the weather here is fantastic at the moment, but then again, it being Ireland, Wednesday is a lifetime away, so I've no idea what it's going to be like, I can be honest. Let's take a look at this here. I mean, the Sensational Space Shifters, first of all. The last bunch of years, what have you been doing? Do you think you've come back to a kind of music that's a mix of classic blues and world music, as opposed to what you might have been doing with, you know, the whole idea of the Grammy winning album you had, say, back in 2007, which was more, I don't know, Nashville-y or whatever it was?
Well, you know, the thing that what happened, I got the opportunity of a lifetime to work in the Nashville scene and be quite still pretty inventive sound-wise and stuff, and to work with Alison Krauss and then Patty Griffin to learn how to sing in a different way is a singer's dream, to really jump ship and try something else out. Having done that, I came back and did the picnic last summer outside of Dublin, and it was wild. Hooking up with that kind of trance, sort of, if you like, Massive Attack meets Jar Wobble meets Led Zeppelin goes to West Africa. It's a very exciting place to be, and it allows me to get a little bit more physical with my voice. And the dynamic of the whole thing is pretty. It's a lot more exciting and a lot less, if you like, classic.
Yeah.
In as much as the American thing, working with T-Bone Burnett and doing that was really, really, it was a learning curve for me. I can go back to that when I feel like it, but this is a really exciting place. We've got this guy from West Africa who's really turns the show into a complete trip. I mean, it's very exciting for me because I've always been looking to try and create power and fury without it ending up like some cheesy old 70s thing, you know.
But is it good now? I mean, like, we saw you at the picnic last year, and is it good now that what you're doing now is you're kind of singing alone again after a bunch of years of having to get it right or having to do it in harmony or whatever the word is, so you don't have to worry about that, and therefore that allows you, for instance, to put in so many Led Zeppelin songs into the set, because you had quite a few last time around. I mean, you had, I don't know, Babe, I'm Gonna Leave, but Black Dog, Four Sticks, What Is and What Should Never Be, Whole Lot of Love, Rock and Roll, they were all in there. And you're able to put those in and just do what it is you want to do with this new musical backdrop.
Yeah, you can screw with them, you know. I mean, people talk about Dylan being sort of the unknown object. But the great thing about Dylan, even if he doesn't want to speak, even if he turns his back for the whole show and thinks he's Miles Davis, is that he attacks beautiful songs and he never does them a disservice. And I think that's the way I look at the Zeppelin stuff, to turn it on its head, spin it upside down and still come out with fury is much better than actually ending up in a covers band of your own music.
There's
nothing sadder than just ending up just doing the same old shit for the rest of your life. It's there's got to be fun inside the it's an open prison, basically, and it's great. So I can use a lot of new stuff and a lot of new sounds and a lot of rhythm, lots and lots of polyrhythm and big boom that goes on.
Sure,
but it gets me really exciting stuff, you know. We were in Denmark night before last, and it's just great to see, which I saw at the picnic, by the way, the crowd actually becomes part of the show. Because they help you to move the thing up into another place completely, which is great. And we got a new record coming out in September, which takes that a lot further, because you've got melody and song structure and big sounds in the middle of new songs, which is great. And we'll be doing some of those in Cork on Wednesday, you know, because we brought him into the set. And it's great because it's just a little bit, turns the whole thing upside down onto its head again.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you want to do in terms of rearranging the music and enlarging it and contracting it and mutating it and all the rest. But I actually don't agree with you about the Bob Dylan thing. I saw him for the 16th time last Tuesday and I can't stand what he does to his old music. How is it that you do it in a certain way? When I mentioned the Zeppelin songs earlier on, you made them completely different and new and bright and whatever the word is. What's the method, the key to rearranging? Is it just believing in the song that it can be taken in a different direction? Because that's not enough for me, of what Bob Dylan does to his. You seem to do it differently.
Well, you know, Dylan is a laconic character, and he deals in that sort of the mystery of anti-communication, if you like. And which is, you know, when I heard Hard Rain's Gonna Fall and you know, that sort of thing, it's like the way that he'd moved it was amazing. And that was a while back, so I mean, I haven't seen him for the last year or so. But for me, I know that the kernel of a lot of those songs in their very early states, back in 1970 or 72, 75, were very strong and powerful, but they were of a particular time. And of course, if you want the Lifetime jukebox, there are plenty of acts to go and see that will just...
Hold on a second. That's not fair. I'm not looking for a jukebox. I just don't want him to take his songs and dismantle them to the point of just lunacy.
No, I gotcha. Okay. There, yeah.
And that's what I think he does.
Yeah. Well, maybe he's not had a very good day that day. I don't know. at the same time, I think for me, there's a sort of will about these guys. You know, I mean, being in America for the time I was, and I bought a place in Texas, and I thought, this is it. These people are the kind of musical nous in America, the knowledge of old music, black and white, was so tantalizing and exciting for me to kick into. And so to come back, to realize that, you know, I need to be in the old world. And the strange thing was that I found so many of the songs that came out of the Appalachians were already in Ireland and Wales and Northumbria and Yorkshire and all that stuff. And even in the crusty old Cecil Sharp house down there in London, which is supposed to be the Library of British Folk Music, there's so many songs that existed up in the hills in Tennessee were still alive and well in the UK. So to come over and to get the energy from guys who are on the Bristol scene, guys who work in post-bebop jazz centers in East London, and you mix it all together, you got such an amazing collision, which is not nothing, there's nothing purist about what we do. We just really mutate and just, it's almost like a kind of a musical whirly gig. It kind of spins around and changes gear in the middle of shows.
And when you look back, Robert, like at the 1960s and the British blues boom and all the rest of it, I mean, like when you were going to school and there was a parallel life going along beside you, which is, we'll just call it Robert Johnson for the moment, are you amazed that so many British musicians just got so lost in the blues music of America? Did you find that odd in some ways? Brilliant, but odd.
Well, you know, I do this a Buck of White song every night because I was lucky enough and I'm sadly old enough to have seen a lot of these artists who had come out of been driving a school bus, been a janitor in some place, and then John Faye and the guy out of Canned Heat, Bob Hite, I think it was, they found these guys and they brought them back to the Newport Folk Festival in the 62, 63. And then they came over to Europe and they played through all the European cities and into Scandinavia. And I went to see this stuff. And I was like, I couldn't understand what it was as a white kid, working class kid at a grammar school in England, that something hit me that made me want to weep. I didn't get the blue note, and it was the blue note that obsessed me and obsessed so many of my peers with no explanation, because, you know, we weren't on the back end of racism on the 12 years of slavery. We weren't in any of that shit. We were just kids growing up in grey post-war Britain, just before the big boom of colour in the, you know, Carnaby Street colour and the sort of whole mod thing. So why did it come along and why did it affect us? I think it was because there was a mournful element about the chordal work and the scales, and there was an expressive voice that seemed to be so much more in tune with a kid growing up with all the kind of, I don't know what's happening with testosterone and all that sort of thing at that time. There's confusion in teenage boys. You hear the blues. I mean, it sounds like a ridiculous analogy, but how much more appropriate is that than listening to Jim Reeves or Cliff Richard?
Yeah, right.
Something happened, and we heard this kind of menace, too. I heard something that was so stated when I listened to Howlin' Wolf and Robert Johnson and Son House. And Robert Johnson, of course, the mystery of Robert Johnson became something. Suddenly we found music where there was something else. There were so many links to other things which were not quite supernatural, but they were certainly not part of the kind of Sunday night at the London Palladium.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Variety.
And also, it's not as though there's an awful lot of Robert Johnson music out there. You can listen to it all in the space of about an hour, all the stuff that is there.
Yeah, yeah.
But just the whole idea, like, I mean, if you take Robert Johnson and take what you're doing now, Sensational Space Shifters, and, like, the fact that the sound of a new project and the sound of music developing and keep moving is what does it for you. Did you discover something? When you stepped off the plane in Led Zeppelin with John Bonham at LAX, and you thought, wow, LA is a fantastic place, and you went down to the Whiskey, which is the place where all the bands played, and there you saw Steve Miller one night, Howlin' Wolf the next, The Doors the next, and you were completely welcomed in. Did you realise there's a world of music out there that's more than just what I've been growing up with in Wolverhampton?
Well, of course, because everything was, there was no barrier between John Lee Hooker playing a show with Clear Light and Steve Miller and The Doors. It all meshed into one thing, and that has always been the creed. And I think it's now the way it is, of course, with all big festivals, be it in Ireland or Europe or whatever. Unfortunately, the great majesty and the sort of disheveled nature of somebody like John Lee Hooker, mixing that with Jim Morrison at his most sensual, if you like, and Joni Mitchell and all that old stuff, if you bring that into the modern world now, because of the way that the media has changed, the hook lines of songs now carry through, whereas back then, you were hoping that Howlin' Wolf might play the most amazing harmonica part, or that Eric Clapton would be, you know, doing something unbelievably spectacular musically. That whole idiom has moved over into the great chiming vocal refrain, which is repeated 48 times in each song.
Yeah.
So now the festival has taken on a different... It's a celebration and a communion of what the media can do. I mean, I was just listening to the commercials before we started talking, and you know, How to Get a Paul Weller Album, which is great because Paul Weller is a classic and, you know, a classy artist. But there's so many different ways of pushing music out now. It becomes almost the same as sort of getting a free movie ticket or a box of chocks or something like that. Whereas in those days, you went to these actual fulcrums, these real pinnacles of musical experience, and you were part of a huge youth culture. I mean, walking around Paris last night, it's like the whole of France, it was music day. So every street corner, there's somebody playing a Stevie Wonder song or some North African stuff going on. But in 1968, Paris was burning.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, London was burning. There was Detroit was burning. The whole social infrastructure and the response in festivals, in the way that people see music, the whole access to everything is way different. Once upon a time, if you went to see a big festival, it was like you were going to some sort of sacred gathering of people who were in the know, because there was the mainstream of music, which was the pop sort of fodder, which could put you to sleep, if not attack your parents.
Yeah.
And then there was the kind of underground stuff which was the massive thing, and that's what Led Zeppelin was. You know, we were part of a huge underground movement. You know, we didn't go and see the king or the queen or the president. You know, we had cops kicking the doors in and going through. Wake up in the middle of the night in Australia, in Perth, and find a flash lamp at the end of the bed and a cop going through my suitcase.
Yeah, and you also didn't do many interviews, and you didn't put your names on the cover of albums, and you didn't release singles and all the rest of it, and all those statements meant something of who you were. Needless to say, Robert, I did say that I'd be talking to you now. I was 25 to 11 here, now it's 25 to 12 where you are in Paris, and I asked people to send in questions, and you can imagine what all the questions are. All right, obviously. And it's in particular with, what do you call it, Jimmy Page. We had a special with him on the programme just 3 weeks ago because he's now taken the first three albums, we'll take the next three and we'll take the three after that and release them with other stuff. Are you involved in anything in terms of that archival re-release of the three?
Yeah.
So have you got tapes that Jimmy didn't have and you gave him tapes?
Yeah, exactly that, yeah. And then that goes back to Coda, if you like, after John passed away. The track Poor Tom was a quarter-inch demo that I had at home. And, there's loads of stuff. And also, there was something called... we used to have code names for things before I gave him a title. Because the titles and the lyrics were kind of my department, mostly, apart from a couple of tracks that Jimmy had before Led Zepp. So, yeah, as he's... You know, the thing is that John's finishing off what he's doing. He's working on an opera in Mexico or somewhere, or even it might be Mitchum. And I'm touring all the time with my mates. So we meet up and we exchange ideas and we access a lot of old photographs and stuff like that and go through it all. And they piece it together and try and make it so that everybody is represented equally throughout everything that's visual. And when it came to remastering, obviously the masters are the masters. You put them through graphic equalizers and stuff like that to tart them up and make them sound a bit brighter or give them the bottom end that they deserved, especially going on to vinyl now because, you know, vinyl's much more of an indication of what it should have sounded like in the first place. So that is, like with my new record,
new record being a Sensational Spaceshifters album.
Yeah, it's called The Ceaseless Roar. It's out in early September. And the thing is, obviously, I had to do to my record what Jimmy did to the Zeppelin stuff because I've made, I think, 14 records since Bonzo passed away, 14 collections of songs. So I've been on an individual course for 34 years now, and that's quite a long time, so I think I know what I'm doing. But when it comes to the Zepp stuff, we leave it to Jimmy because you can't remix them because they're already mixed. All those songs are already there. So the ones that you hadn't heard before have come off cassettes or...
Yeah, exactly,
Or multi-tracks where it was an attempt to get it. There's some great stuff... especially from the Physical Graffiti period, which is really exciting. But this, so for me, I can take my stuff. You know, I had a huge responsibility, and which I relished in the 70s, contributing to that music. And now I can do more or less whatever I like with it because I respect it and I can twist it and turn it. And I think that's the whole idea of invention and color. Is what it was in the very beginning. We talked about the blues boom in England with the white kids. Well, everybody was trying to mutate Bobby Bland or Otis Rush or whatever it was. Everybody was moving into another sphere and kicking it around a little bit and shifting it about. And that's what I do with my own songs, whether they be solo records that have had some success in various parts of the planet or... All with Zepp stuff, it's great. And the Space Shifters is a great tool because you got a trippy guitarist from Cast. You got a far-out arabesque guitarist from, you know, Jar Wobble and from Sinead O'Connor, Justin Adams, that is. You got the keyboard dynamo from Massive Attack, Johnny Baggett. You got this rhythm section that's amazing. Then you got a West African guy who uses a one-string fiddle in the original African guitar, the Kologo. And the thing is, it's just insane. And you have to start laughing in the middle of it all because it's just like, can it really happen that you can have a career this long and find somewhere where you get so much back? As a singer, I get so much back on that stage because, you know, it takes off. We know places where the whole music will lift, but we don't quite know where it's going to go.
And the whole thing for you, Robert, is about a journey, is it? I mean, would you look at what... You mentioned John earlier on, as in John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin. Like, last time I saw him, he was on stage at the Isle of Wight playing with C6 Steve, and then he goes to them Crooked Vultures and makes it really hard, crunchy music again. It was a brilliant album, I think, somewhat underrated. And now he's writing a bloody opera. Do you say that's a journey?
Well, look, the thing is, he always used to say to me, I used to talk to him about various songs in Zeppelin and say, hey, John, how about doing, and I'd mention a title. He'd say, oh, I'm sorry, I don't actually listen to the words. I just listen to the music.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
So I said, well, up yours, pal, you know, so he's always been a little bit, but he did some great stuff. He did some great production in Nashville with Uncle Earl and that girl, right. Abigail Washburn, who's moved out of that. I think the thing about Jonesy and the thing about myself is that we go out and we dance in the world. We dance round and round, and sometimes we fall down dizzy and laughing. Sometimes we go in a corner and weep. I mean, that's surely the role of a musician for all of life is to...
Yeah, absolutely. But if, in other words, if I was to ask John Paul Jones, what does there's a bustle in your hedgerow mean? He wouldn't have a clue and wouldn't care either, which is fair enough, I think. By the way, just speaking of that song, I mean, like, do you fall in and out of love with certain songs? Like Stairway to Heaven, might you have hated it for a long... By the way, the first place you ever played Stairway to Heaven was in Belfast, and the second night in March 1971 was here in Dublin. But do you fall out of love, and does anything bring you back there? Like, I know you went to the Kennedy Centre Honours thing and Heart played it. When you saw them do that, was it something, oh, well, gosh, you know, this might be quite... Like, you know, I don't need to be scared of a song like this, or do you care?
No, but it's sanctimonious stuff that worries me. I mean, when I saw them do that, I was moved to tears. I could not believe. I mean, I felt this emotion because I knew that I'd been unkind to my own song, my own lyric, and all that stuff, because I thought it was of a particular time.
Yeah.
What happened that night was, it was the only part of the show of a tribute to our music that actually carried anything subtle and anything individual, because the rest was a melee, I thought. You know, there are certain drummers who should not sing, and there are certain singers who shouldn't drum, and all that stuff. Ho, ho. So I thought the Stairway sounded great, and I am proud of it, but of course it doesn't relate to me today, whereas What Is and What Should Never Be in a crazy way still
yeah,
does.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And so does Going to California, and so does a Whole Lot of Love. They do, because they came from a different place, and the building of Whole Lot of Love, the construction of it, where it's derivative beginnings, the whole thing goes back to the British blues boom and the Irish blues boom with Rory Gallagher and, all the different gangs that came out of the Republic and out of Ulster. It's a different thing, but it's a Whole Lot of Love was coming out of that place, as was rock and roll and maybe even Boogie with Stu and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So now I can do it myself with my own stuff, and there's some quite remarkably heavy stuff on the new record. There's a track called Turn It Up, which is all about the kind of right-wing AM radio in Mississippi, the kind of subscribing to heaven by sending a donation to a 1-800 number and all this stuff. But mostly and more, I realize that this dance that I've been having with music, as each member of each band, whether it be, you know, David Bowie or Phil Collins or Captain Beefheart or whoever you want to talk about, we've got to really live it out for the right reasons, and that's what brings me to court.
Well, then, you know, this dance that you're having with music and living it out for the right reasons, that would just not, it couldn't be the case if you had to do or were in a position to do a Stones or a Rod or whatever it happens to be, in terms of just the whole madness that would surround, you know what I'm saying here, a Zeppelin getting back together would just be stupid. It'd just be wrong. I mean, like even on the level of, like, you know, you did do one gig in 37 years. 21 million people applied for tickets for a venue that takes less than 20,000. Did that say anything to you? I'm not saying say anything to you to want to get back with Led Zeppelin, but did it say anything to you in saying, wow, that's nice to know. Now, on with Sensational Space Shifters.
Well, you know, we played in Pink Pop in Holland 2 weeks ago, and the night as we arrived, got off the transport, off the plane, the guys went to see the Stones, and the Stones were playing a festival. Mm. It wasn't them, they were part of a festival, and on that festival were the next night with the Arctic Monkeys and da-da-da-da-da. And when you become part of the kind of cut and thrust of musical theater around the world, then that's reasonably acceptable.
Yeah.
I think then you're just saying, okay, we're a band and we're out playing. What is questionable is the whole idea of new music and new material being there or not being there. It's not a matter of playing it safe. It's just, I know what it's like to see, and I remember it was Stairway to Heaven, to see a crowd almost silenced in their fury and their exultation because they don't know the song. Well, you know, that's what I was talking about going to see contemporary bands playing at festivals, is that everybody knows the song because mainstream radio embraces it. And I think for artists of a certain age, you can make new records, big artists, The Who or The Stones or whoever it might be, and they don't get the same kind of, the thing has changed. So they end up playing the songs that everybody loves forever and ever and ever, and that means that maybe in the pot of 100 songs, there's 20 favorites that they can go to
to keep it going.
Now, that isn't really why we started doing this when we were teenagers. You know, we started doing this, we didn't want to be Cliff in the Shadows. We wanted to, what the MC5 said, kick out the jams, and then something else they said.
They did.
And I think really that's really what it should be. You got to live underneath the same standard, the same flag, the same colours.
Yeah, but at the same time, like Robert, it's true to say that your legs were cut from underneath you because, you know, it ended prematurely when John Bonham died. That was it. You would have gone on to do more stuff in the 80s as Led Zeppelin, even though the journey you've taken since is one that you're very, very pleased with, because the sound of a new project and the sound of music developing and keeping moving has turned out to be a really good thing for you.
Yeah, I don't know how long the legs would have been on any project that made it into the 80s, because that was the 80s were a particularly emasculating era.
Yeah.
I remember Ahmet Ertegun telling me he'd just signed Phil Collins to the label after In the Air Tonight. Phil was doing some other stuff, and Phil had really been a champion of my early solo work. He played on two albums and did a tour with me. And he was just such an incorrigible character. He was really great. And Ahmet Ertegun turned to me and he said, we could have had a number one with Phil's record if Eric Clapton hadn't been playing a guitar on it. And because guitars were so unfashionable. And I looked at Ahmet, and he looked at me, and he's the guy that floated Buffalo Springfield and recorded Ray Charles, Aretha, The Coasters, The Drifters, Iron Butterfly, Crosby, Stole the Stash, you know, all that stuff. And you'd say, and we looked at each other and shrugged and had two large gin and tonics, because it was unbelievable what the 80s created. And but at the same time, they threw out 4AD records, This Mortal Coil, Cocteau Twins, you know, there's some great stuff.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
That's came out of Yazoo.
The Ahmet Ertegun you're talking about is for the Celebration concert from 2007. But look, it's just on what you're saying there and what you want to do, Robert. There's Forbes magazine this month has a thing about CEOs and people in charge of huge corporations and how they continue to stay there till their 70s and their 80s and all that if they can. They say, the once proudly strutting Robert Plant conducts himself now with a dignity, a self-effacing sense of humour and a humility that is instructive, even enlightening, in our narcissistic, celebrity-driven, winner-takes-all culture. In other words, like, you know, there's a time to step off, and you stepped off and never wanted to get back on. You simply want to be on your musical journey.
Well, yes, but I'd also like to get a copy of that and get that cut out and stuck in my village pub.
Well, it's in Forbes at the moment. By the way, speaking of the village pub or whatever, just take a look. Are you watching the World Cup?
I have been, yes, and obviously the cross of St. George is obviously now folded up and put back in the drawer again.
It certainly has, yeah.
I don't care. I don't care about it. I like my local team and all the kind of the roller coaster ride of just watching Shamrock Rovers. In fact, Wolverhampton Wanderers always do a tour of Ireland. That's their warm-up.
Right. You know, do you remember, does it go back to like getting on with your dad in terms of like being brought to soccer matches to Molineux? I mean, I know you're a Wolverhampton Wanderers fan. Did you ever see Billy Wright playing?
Yeah, I did. And I got to know Billy Wright later on.
Oh.
I did see him play, of course. I saw that team, which was sort of world-beaten team, playing all the kind of European, the very first European floodlit matches in the UK against Honved and Lokomotiv Leipzig and Sparta.
Yeah.
but Billy Wright ran ATV Midland soccer and sports thingy bob before he went to manage Arsenal or something. And he was a great guy, very funny. And his daughter went into show business. And I used to go and do Tiswas on a Saturday morning.
Oh, yeah.
With Dave Edmonds. And
are you a vice president of Wolverhampton Wanderers these days?
I am, but don't hold it against me. I mean, everybody's got something going on.
Wait a minute, I can try the other one you are. You're a CBE. It's like James Bond, Commander Bond. Should I be calling you Commander Plant?
Well, there's somebody in the other room painting her fingernails, and I'd like to think that she would think like that.
But, right, okay, very good, right. By the way, I did ask people if they wanted to send in some questions. By the way, just the band is playing Sensational Space Shifters, Robert Plant, in Cork this coming Wednesday. There's one of the questions is, Robert, will Kidderminster Harriers ever get back in the league?
Hope not. No, I don't want to say that. I mean, if they sort out what's going on in the boardroom, they could quite easily do that. But I think it's more like Pistols at Dawn. Hey, by the way, I have to say that when we play in Cork, the guys who open the show for us are called the North Mississippi All-Stars, and they are from just exactly that.
Yes, I've played some stuff on the radio from them. They're on a sampler album that I got some time back. Yeah, they're very good.
Yeah, and they've got this guy called Lightning Malcolm who plays with them as well. I mean, who plays with Junior Kimsborough's grandkids. So it's a real Mississippi Delta meets Memphis jam, and it's fantastic. I mean, the guys are really... They play. I try and get them to come to wherever I play in the world and come and play with me because they're really, really great players. And also, they're great adaptable musicians, and they come from a great long line of family line of great players. So, I mean, if anybody who's listening to this program thinks that the opening act is going to be somebody balancing egg cups on their nose, it's something quite different. It's really good.
Okay, so Mississippi All-Stars and, of course, Sensational Space Shifters on Wednesday in Cork. Listen, Robert, thanks a million for talking to us. Just one last thing I want to say is that when I started this whole thing, talking about the last bunch of years in Nashville and all the rest, did you find that in Nashville, as people have said to me before, that they're very serious about what they do and brilliant about what they do, but they all go to bed by 8 o'clock at night?
I thought that sounds like one of my quotes. Well, I think what it is that everybody's, if they don't go on tour... A lot of great musicians move to Nashville. They go to Nashville because they want to work. They want to work and they want to play classy music. And what's happened is, if they can get two sessions a day, then their wife's got the tea on by 6 o'clock. So the wife brings up the guy's wind by 10 p.m. He goes to bed. He thinks he's actually still in Jefferson Airplane, but he's not. And then he wakes up and gets two more sessions. But the trouble is, the music in Nashville is becoming more and more sort of... banal and very, very pop top 40. So those great days of playing with Glenn Campbell or somebody like that, you know, George Jones, the fantastic musicians that were around, Chris Christopherson playing, you know, they seem to, those guys, that era of real beautiful playing has been superseded by another kind of period of sort of bubblegum country. I went to the CMAs with Alison when we won a lot of awards, and sitting in front of me was Joe Walsh of the Eagles, who I always think of as Joe Walsh from the James Gang when he was a wildcat. He's a wildcat. And he's one of my friends, you know. He is one of the right kind of guys that still, he looks at me and winks and gets on with the job. And he was sitting in front of me, and I tapped on his shoulders and I leaned forward in the crowd of makeup and flurry, and I said, "We got this award, kid. You've got to, don't even think of standing up." And sure enough, we got it. And he turned to me and he said, "What have we done to ourselves?"
Yeah, I saw him on stage in Dublin 2 weeks ago with the Eagles. He was a panic. All right, well, listen, look, thank you very much indeed, Robert, for talking to us. Hey, it is Robert Plant and the Sensational Space Shifters this coming Wednesday. It's in Cork.
Good. Thanks a lot, Dave. It's great to talk to you too. If you see BP Fallon somewhere...
I knew that would come in somewhere. I should have known. I remember you were here in 1983 or 84 at night, and at that stage you said, I believe BP works in here. Quick, I want to hide.
Yeah. Well, pick him up and give him half a crown.
I will. I'll give him half a crown. Good man yourself, Robert. Thanks a million. Good luck. See you. Take it easy. Bye.